Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Katie Weaver and Alice Bryant. Later, we will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Katie Weaver.
American President Donald Trump is calling for stronger gun control measures. He commented one day after an emotional meeting with survivors of school shootings. Trump repeated his call to permit some teachers to carry guns at schools. On Twitter, he wrote that highly trained teachers would also serve as a deterrent, and the attacks would end. Trump also tweeted, "I will be strongly pushing comprehensive background checks with an emphasis on mental health, raise age to 21, and end sale of bump stocks." Last week, a 19-year-old gunman shot and killed 17 students and teachers at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida. The gunman used an AR-15 semi-automatic rifle that he purchased legally. Trump's tweets and calls for action represent the strongest position on gun control from the president so far. But a White House official told the Associated Press that Trump was not supporting or ruling out any one policy. Trump did not immediately offer more details. During his presidential campaign, Trump embraced gun rights and received the support of the National Rifle Association, or NRA. In his tweets Thursday morning, Trump repeated his support for the NRA. He wrote, "The folks who work so hard at the NRA are great people and great American patriots. They love our country and will do the right thing." Wayne LaPierre is head of the NRA. He spoke Thursday at the Conservative Political Action Conference just outside Washington, D.C. It was his first public appearance since the Parkland school shooting. LaPierre did not address Trump's recent comments. But he did accuse Democrats of using the tragedy for political gain. He said, "To stop a bad guy with a gun, it takes a good guy with a gun." LaPierre said the same thing after the 2012 shooting at Sandy Hook Elementary School in Newtown, Connecticut. 26 students and teachers were killed in that attack. On Wednesday, the NRA said it would reject any proposal to raise the minimum age for buying a gun. In a statement, it said, "Legislative proposals that prevent law-abiding adults aged 18 to 20 years old from acquiring rifles and shotguns effectively prohibits them for purchasing any firearm, thus depriving them of their constitutional right to self-protection." The current federal minimum age for buying or owning handguns is 21. but the limit is 18 for buying rifles, including military-style assault weapons, such as the AR-15 used in the Florida shooting. The NRA's statement signaled a difficult road ahead for any proposal to strengthen gun control measures. Legislative efforts to pass gun control measures after other mass shootings all failed because they lacked enough support. Chuck Schumer is the Democratic Party leader in the United States Senate. He said the real test for Trump and the Republican-controlled Congress is not words and sympathy, but action. Schumer asked on Twitter, "Will President Trump and the Republicans finally buck the NRA and get something done? Could this time be different?" I'm Katie Weaver.
This is What's Trending Today. Hartsfield-Jackson Atlanta International Airport is the busiest airport in the world. With more than 2,500 flights coming and going each day, it serves over 100 million passengers a year. So what is the latest offering? A nonstop flight to Wakanda. If you have not heard of Wakanda, you probably have not seen Black Panther, the new superhero movie from Marvel Comics. The film tells the story of an imaginary African nation called Wakanda. It is the home of the Black Panther himself, Prince T'Challa. In its opening weekend, Black Panther earned a record-setting $235 million in American theaters. It is the number one movie in the world. Black Panther has connections to Atlanta, Georgia. Part of it was filmed in the city. Earlier this week, the Atlanta airport decided to have some fun. It tweeted a photograph of a departure gate sign that read, "Wakanda, 7:30 p.m. It also wrote, "The bags are packed. Hashtag Wakanda forever." In the film, Wakanda is a developed, technologically advanced country. It is both extremely modern and deeply traditional. It has never belonged to a foreign power. Many Twitter users seemed extremely excited to book a one-way flight to Wakanda. Some people had questions about the trip, including the food and entertainment available. The Atlanta airport responded to many of their requests. Even actor Lupita Nyong'o, who stars in Black Panther, wanted to know what films would be shown en route to Wakanda. Her movie suggestions were a play on real movie titles, but changed to include Black Panther names and characters. The airport's idea to announce a fictional flight from Atlanta to Wakanda reportedly came from Atlanta area chef Darius Williams. A video on Facebook shows Williams asking an airline employee to help him book a flight from Atlanta to Wakanda. The employee treated him with respect, but was understandably confused. And that's What's Trending Today.
Imagine that you haven't seen a good friend in a month. In a telephone call, your friend tells you she would like to get together for dinner, but can't think of a restaurant to go to. So you offer an idea. Listen to a short conversation.
"I'd love to have dinner on Friday, but I'm not sure where."
"How about we go to Shea Phillip?"
"Great idea. I haven't been there in over a year."
The phrase "how about" is one common way to make a friendly suggestion in English. To make a suggestion means to offer an idea or plan for someone to think about. You probably already know a few ways to make suggestions in English, using words such as could or should. But on this Everyday Grammar program, we'll talk about common phrases you can use for making friendly suggestions. We use many of these phrases in question form. Let's start by talking a little bit more about the phrase, how about? When you ask a question using how about, you are asking someone if they agree with what you are suggesting. There are two structures for using this phrase. The first is how about plus subject plus simple verb form. Let's listen to the first example again.
How about we go to Shea Phillip?
In this example, the subject is we and the verb is go. The second structure for using how about is how about plus gerund. Listen.
How about going to Shea Phillip?
In this example, the subject is still we, although it is not directly stated. Instead, the subject is implied, and going is the gerund form of the verb go. You can also use how about plus gerund to make a suggestion for an action that does not involve you. For example,
how about starting a group for English learners?
The phrase, what about, is very similar to how about. You can replace the phrasing, how about plus gerund, with what about plus gerund to express the same meaning. For example,
what about going to Shea Phillip?
However, what about plus gerund is less common in American English than in other types of English. Something that English learners will notice is that native English speakers often leave out both the subject and verb when we use what about and how about to make suggestions. Listen.
How about Shea Phillip?
What about Shea Phillip?
Why don't is very similar to how about and what about. The difference here is that we ask the question using the negative don't. The structure is why don't plus subject plus simple verb form. Let's hear our example again, but this time with why don't.
Why don't we go to Shea Phillip?
Why not also uses the negative not. But this phrase is a little different from the other phrases. It is usually used to make more general suggestions. Advertisers often use why not for selling products or services. The structure is why not plus simple verb form. Listen.
Why not treat yourself to a Caribbean holiday?
In this example, the subject is you, but it is not directly stated. And the verb is treat. Using shall is another way to make a suggestion. However, it sounds a lot more formal and is more common in British English than American English. The structure is shall plus subject plus simple verb form. For example,
shall we go to Shea Phillip?
One thing to note when using shall to make suggestions, it is only used with the subjects I and we. We would not say, shall you, to offer an idea. Sometimes suggestions are expressed in statements instead of questions, such as with the phrase, let's. Let's is a contraction for the words, let us. It is used to tell someone what you want to do with them. The structure is let's plus simple verb form. Listen.
Let's go to Shea Phillip.
In this sentence, the subject is us. So, how do you respond to friendly suggestions? You can either accept or decline. A few phrases for accepting a suggestion are,
That's a good or great idea.
That sounds good or great.
Perfect.
Thanks, I'd love to.
And a few phrases for declining a suggestion include,
I'd prefer,
That's a good idea, but,
I'm not sure.
When you decline a suggestion, you may want to then politely suggest something else. For example,
I'm not sure. Shea Phillip is not my favorite. How about Fearless Farmers?
Making and responding to suggestions in English takes practice, but it's one of the more fun things you can do with a classmate, friend, or family member. I'm Alice Bryant.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. 1860 was a year of mixed feelings of hope and fear. Americans had hope for the future because they would be electing a new president. But they had fear that even a new president could not hold the nation together. The states of the South were very close to leaving the Union over the issue of slavery. Tony Riggs and Frank Oliver talk about the candidates and the issues in the election of 1860.
After 4 years as president, James Buchanan decided not to run again. Buchanan was a Democrat. His party, like the nation, was split over slavery. Southern Democrats wanted the party to support slavery. Northern Democrats refused. The opposition Republican Party expected to gain votes from dissatisfied Democrats. Republicans had become stronger since the last presidential election in 1856. They felt their candidate would win in 1860.
The Democratic nominating convention opened in April in Charleston, South Carolina. Senator Stephen Douglas of Illinois was the leading candidate. He had the support of a majority of convention delegates. But he did not have the two-thirds majority needed to win the nomination. Many Southern Democrats did not like Stephen Douglas. Some did not trust him. Others did not accept his policies on slavery. Douglas did not oppose slavery or the spread of slavery. However, he said no federal law could make slavery legal in a territory where the people did not want it. This was his policy of popular sovereignty.
The Southern Democrats who opposed Stephen Douglas were led by William Yancey of Alabama. Yancey wanted to get a pro-slavery statement into the party's platform. He was sure Douglas would not accept the nomination based on such a platform. If Yancey failed to get the statement he wanted, he would take Southern Democrats out of the convention and out of the party. The Committee on Resolutions considered three platforms. One platform declared that the people of a territory had the right to decide if slavery would be legal or illegal. The second declared that the Supreme Court had that right. And the third declared that no one did, that slavery was legal everywhere.
Yeah, country.
Yancey spoke to the convention in support of the pro-slavery platform. He said pro-slavery Democrats did not want to destroy the Union. But he said someone had to make clear to anti-slavery Democrats that the Union would be dissolved if the constitutional rights of slave owners were not honored. Yancey spoke of the danger of a great slave rebellion. He described it as a sleeping volcano that threatened the lives, property, and honor of the people of the South. He said the actions of the North might cause that volcano to explode. Another convention delegate answered Yancey's speech. He said Northern Democrats were tired of defending the interests of the South. Now, he said, Yancey tells us we must agree that slavery is right. He orders us to hide our faces and eat dirt. Gentlemen of the South, he said, you mistake us. We will not do it.
In this atmosphere of tension, it was clear that a pro-slavery platform would not be approved. The Alabama delegation announced that, therefore, it must withdraw. The delegations from the other six states of the Deep South, Arkansas, Florida, Georgia, Louisiana, Mississippi, and Texas, did the same. Those 50 men organized their own convention. They approved a pro-slavery platform, but did not nominate anyone for president. They agreed to meet again a few weeks later in Richmond, Virginia. The Northern Democrats postponed their nomination, too. They agreed to meet again in Baltimore, Maryland.
The Republican Party held its presidential nominating convention in Chicago, Illinois. There was no question who was the leading candidate. He was the best-known Republican in the country at that time, Senator William Seward of New York. The Republican platform seemed to contain something for everyone. For those opposed to slavery, the platform rejected the idea that slave owners had a constitutional right to take slaves into new territories. For foreign-born Americans, it supported their right to full citizenship. For manufacturers, it proposed a new tax on imports to protect American industry. And for those in the Northwest, it called for free land for settlers and federal aid to build roads and canals. Delegates approved the platform with loud cheers. They would return the next day to nominate their candidate for president.
William Seward was sure he would win the nomination. If not on the first vote, he thought, then on the second. But there was some opposition to Seward, and his campaign organization failed to see its strength. The candidate of the opposition was Abraham Lincoln. The Republican convention voted three times. Lincoln gained support on each ballot, but neither he nor Seward received enough votes for the nomination. Then, before a fourth vote could be taken, a delegate from Ohio asked to speak. The big room became silent. "Mr. Chairman," he said, "I rise to announce the change of four votes of Ohio to Mr. Lincoln." That was enough to give Abraham Lincoln the Republican nomination for president.
1 month later, the Democrats reopened their nominating convention. Most of the Southern Democrats who walked out of the first meeting came back. Many of their seats at the convention had been given to new delegates. So a new dispute arose over which delegates had the right to be there. A compromise plan split the seats between old and new delegates. But most of the Southerners rejected it. One by one, a majority of each Southern delegation walked out. The remaining Democrats then voted for a candidate. They chose Stephen Douglas. Southern Democrats nominated their own candidate, John Breckinridge of Kentucky, and a group called the Constitutional Union Party nominated John Bell.
The election campaign opened in the summer of 1860. Lincoln was not well known, so the Republican Party published many books and pamphlets about him. They told the story of a poor farm boy who educated himself and, through hard work and honesty, had become a candidate for president. Lincoln's supporters organized a loud and colorful campaign, complete with marching bands and signs. Lincoln himself was silent. He said, "It has been my decision since becoming a candidate to make no speeches. I am here only to see you and to let you see me." In fact, it was Lincoln's assistants who had advised him to say nothing. They believed he had said enough in the past to make clear his position on the important issues.
Stephen Douglas, on the other hand, campaigned very hard. His health was poor, and he had trouble getting money, but that did not stop him from speaking in almost every state. Within a few weeks, however, Douglas recognized that he had no real hope of winning. His position on slavery had cost him all support in the South. Douglas believed that, of the other candidates, Abraham Lincoln had the best chance of winning the presidential election. He also believed pro-slavery extremists would use Lincoln's election as an excuse to take Southern states out of the Union. So he turned his efforts to a campaign for the Union itself. He said, "The election of a man to the presidency by the American people under the Constitution is no reason for any attempt to dissolve this glorious nation."
Election day was November 6th. The popular vote was close between Lincoln and Douglas, but the electoral vote was not. Lincoln received 180. Breckinridge received 72. Bell received 39. And Douglas received just 12. Abraham Lincoln would be the new president of the United States. He would enter office facing the most serious crisis in American history. For before his inauguration, Southern states finally acted on their threats. They began to leave the Union.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.